on other language. I can meet French and German for short terms, for example. Well, thank you for coming this morning at 9 o'clock. I have to admit that I'm not very fresh because I was not very sleeping. I will try to do my best. It's some kind of presentation I made a lot of times in France in different forms because I will introduce myself first. I'm part of a collective that was founded in 2012 in France that is called Désarmolé. Désarmolé means let's disarm them. It's a collective that was founded because some of our friends were heavily injured by grenades thrown by the gendarmes, the French military police. And because they were injured, we began to be more concerned about the use of this kind of weapons. So we began to mostly work about these weapons to understand them better or to make them understand by our comrades and by all the people who could face them. And so the beginning of our work was mostly making leaflets and working on, so we have a leaflet that we update every, like regularly, like every 5 years, every 3 years, it depends. And step by step, we began to get in contact with the victims, other victims, and not only people like injured during protests, but also people injured during football, next to football matches, like football hooligans, or I mean hooligans, ultra. It's like there is different terms, like some people they accept this term, some people not, but the ultra, they prefer to define themselves as ultra. And also we get in touch with people who were injured in the poor neighborhoods, or what we call banlieue, and mostly young people and young men in this case, and at the beginning, because it evolved also with the time, with the use of these weapons. And finally also with all kind of victims by police brutality, and also families of people killed by the police. Just to make you understand like what is the context in France regarding people killed by the police. When we began our work in 2012, we were almost the rate of people killed by the police in France was around 15 a year. And in the next years, under the socialist mandate, the socialist government, we increased, the number increased to 20, 24 people a year. And now with Macron and his way of policing the society, we got up to 30, 35 people a year, with a big record in 2022, when 52 people were killed by the police in France. So this is to make you understand like how this level is going up. So we got in contact with families and victims, and we begin to work on more wide topics, and not only weapons used by the police, but also all the ways people, and especially people of color in France, are facing police brutality for many reasons. I mean, the reason of the police mainly. I mean, there is no reason to face police brutality, no good reason, never. And we began this work, and we also like we provide like legal advice to families. We go to justice with families and victims. Also, when people are injured, they are still there to fight. If they are not there anymore, it's their families, mostly sisters and mothers. It's mainly a feminine struggle. This is also important to know, to understand the context. It's very often the sisters and the mothers, but also brothers, but the most cases are women. And so we try to provide legal advice, and also we work on legal files, so it's a very heavy work to understand what's happening inside the files and what happened in reality, because there is a huge, I will explain after in this mechanism of violence, I will explain how the lie is built by the police. And we provide financial help since 2016. We try to make crowdfunding, but it's very hard because people there seems not to be always very concerned of this, and they really don't give so much money. It's very hard to gather more than 30,000 euro in 3 or 4 years, so it's very nothing, to be honest, because it's very a huge amount of money that every family or every victim needs to go through the whole process of justice. I will speak also about the process of justice, why we decided as anarchists to be part of it, and why it's very hard. And so this collective is existing since now 10 years. We we have like 10 years now, and we are not so much. It's very a collective that we decided to keep somehow open without a very strict framework, who we are not statements or about who you should be to join, and we are only 9 people, to be honest, so it's a very small collective, but we made a lot of presentation and links all over the country, and also somehow we consider that part of the victims, they are also from our collectives because they can all contribute, and they contribute in many ways. So it's like a collective, an open collective, which is constituted by activists, injured people, and any people who is in contact with us and work with us. This is how we work since 10 years, because we try not to narrow our perspective. What else? So I will first try to describe, I think I said everything about the collective. This is the main things to know. I mean, we will put political work, financial work, legal work. I mean, there's nothing that we cannot try to do. So we do quite everything, and we do it as better as we can, but we are like not so strong because we have a very, very, very strong system in front of us and a very aggressive, a very violent system. And this presentation, the meaning of this presentation was to show you because how a system like this can be implemented. And because we consider that the French police system is one of the most structured in the world. And that's why also it's so effective and so aggressive and more totalitarian, because it's a huge machine. And so this is my point today. I will begin with a small history of police, but very small, because when I make this history of police, it can take like a very long time to explain all the aspects. But we can go back to the 19th century. It's always the question we forgot, actually, is how the police was founded and for what reason it was founded. The police was not existing before 1848, and it was even not really called police after 1848. It was implemented after riots made by workers in factories, and they were like making sabotage in the city of Lyon, and they were making just organizing unrest. I mean, there were unrest related to the strike inside the city of Lyon. So they decided to control the population by implementing what they call the sergent de ville. It's like city surgeons. They were the first kind of policemen that are like controlling neighborhoods to check if the poor people, like all people included, were up to organize like unrest in the city. So this was the first kind. And after 30, 40 years, they implemented a lot of new tools, and they implemented the first préfecture de police. That was the préfecture de police of Paris. It's like the police department. It's like the main police department. And this is very important to understand that in France, every department, it's like every county, the equivalent, has a préfecture de police, a préfecture, and this is the main police department, and the préfet de police has a very huge role. He is deciding actually all what is about policing in one county. And this is how it works in France. And this first préfecture de police was implemented in Paris, of course, at the beginning in the end of the 19th century. And they implemented a lot of means. For example, they were the first to use this button to beat people. First, it was a button to show where to go on the streets. And they began to use it as a weapon to beat people who are not respecting the law. And they implemented like police officers on bicycles, and they also began to, in this spirit already, they began to. It's more at the beginning of the 20th century. They begin to experiment gas grenades, and this is very important to know that it's this préfecture de police who were experimenting, and this was especially against anarchists in this period. Because there were a band of anarchists who is called La Banda Bono, which is quite known worldwide, who was like, they could not control this, like the influence of this group, and they wanted to hunt this group. And they experimented the gas grenade in a situation where a group, like an armed group, like La Bande à Bono, is retreating inside a house and holding a house, and they have to get them out of the house somehow without destroying the house by military means. So they began to use gas grenades. But it's really after the First World War, and this is also not always very known, it's the First World War, these gas were used in a big amount in the war against the German soldiers. And it's after, at the end of this war, the First War, that the police were beginning to, it was like validated, legitimated to use gas, not only in armed conflict, but also against riots in society. And from the 30s, it's very interesting to understand also that until the 30s, the soldiers were making riot control in France, and they decided to implement a specific force in the 30s to make riot control, because they noticed that after the war, many soldiers who would be sent to make riot control against unrest would not necessarily obey to the rules, because they were living in the place next to their families, and they were brought to make riot control on their own neighbors and families in the same region. So they wanted to implement a new police force that is not living next to their families. So they are sent all over the country to make riot control. And this force is called Gendarmerie Mobile. It's the first, it was La Garde Nationale, Garde Mobile, as they were on horses. And so they began from the 30s to use this against protest, and they were very known protest in the 30s, and especially the fascist protest. It was kind of the first time the police, this gendarmerie, was used in a big scale against protest. It was a far-right protest. And then we have the war, and the war changed many things. Actually, we had a fascist regime. I mean, we were occupied. France were occupied by Germany, by Nazi Germany, and they implemented, the French government implemented this regime de Vichy, which is actually just an accomplice of Nazi state, and making the dirty job of the Nazi state in France, and they implemented the first police nationale. So it's Philippe Pétain, the leader of the Vichy regime, who implemented the. Who implemented the national police. And so the first La Police Nationale, as we know it today, was founded by the Vichy regime. And at the same time, he implemented a new force of police for crowd control. It's not only the gendarmes, because the gendarmes, they had still a military status. And these cops were especially for riot control and obeying to the préfecture de police and not to the Minister of Defense. So this first riot control police was a fascist one, but at the end of the war, they would make a compromise between all the resistance group, the communists and the Gaullists, like Charles de Gaulle, who won the war, the resistance who won the war with the help of Americans. And I mean, anyway, at the end of the war, they dissolved this police founded by the Vichy regime, but they replaced it immediately by exactly the same force that we know today. It's like the CRS that were founded in 45. Okay. If some French people wants to correct, it's totally welcome. Huh? And if I make mistakes, tell me. And we jump to the 50s. I mean, I make a very big, bigger resume. Huh? It's like there is many more to say and maybe more facts. I could tell hundreds of facts how the French police were involved in hunting Jews. And there's really a heavy story of the French police. And in the 50s, what is very important to remember is that we speak about colonial time. And actually, I want also to say immediately, for me, for our collective, the French state is still a colonial state. It never changed, never stopped. There is no decolonization. I mean, we have still colonies, what we call the Département d'Outre-mer. I mean, Guyana, Réunion, Guadeloupe, Martinique, they are all colonies, even if we don't want to call them anymore like this. We should call them like this because there are people there that are still treated like colonized people, and the police there is not acting at all like in French metropolis. Anyway, this is important to have in mind, that it's not finished, colonialism. And we have also the French state has a heavy, heavy, heavy story with Algeria, especially. Not only, of course, with Vietnam, with all the colonies. All the colonies were concerned by the same violence. But Algeria, there is a specific situation because it was invaded in the 1830s and it was somehow decolonized in 62 and in 1962. And in the 50s, just before the independence of Algeria, there were a huge war, like there were a war that the French government didn't want to call a war. They called it the events of Algeria. So it's very like very pleonasm. I don't know how you say this, but it's like, to understand the thing, what I want to tell to you is that this war from 1957, I mean, it's very hard to say when it began, because it began from the moment the French soldiers came into Algeria in 1830. So there's no beginning of the war. It was never ending. There were resistance in the 30s. There were resistance all along the time. But in the 50s, when the FLN group, who is like a national liberation group of Algeria, were taking weapons and organizing the resistance against France, they faced actually a hybrid force of soldiers, military forces, and of cops. And it's very hard to find pictures of this repression that took place in the end of the 50s, but if you look on the pictures, you will see that the police were really involved in harassing, killing, and with the military forces. And also they were obeying to the Préfecture de Police de Paris. And this is also interesting to know. There were no independent, there were no separated préfecture in Algeria. So the police forces in Algeria were somehow depending and obeying directly to Paris. And they were under the regulation, under the control of the army and military officers who trained in Indochina and Vietnam, and who came to Algeria afterwards, and they implemented a lot of counter-insurrectional policing. And this counter-insurrectional policing, they were really implemented in a harsh way in Algeria by these officers. So they destroyed the resistance of FLN as much as they could, because it survived somehow to this war, but it was like they killed hundreds of people, they tortured hundreds of people, and what is concerning us now regarding police, they implemented a lot of tactics of counterinsurgency, like how to surround the neighborhood, how to mark some doors, how to use also undercover people from the people. This is something new that is very known now. It's a technique used by the police, but it was not always like this. So they were taking people from the population. In many ways, they were blackmailing them. They were frightening them. They were threatening them. They were not really voluntary, but they were wearing some. They put them in a room, for example. They were wearing them like bags on the heads, with holes like this, and they were making a lot of people passing, like prisoners passing in front of them, and the people they had to say, yeah, this one is involved in the FLN, this one is the chef of the FLN of this place, of this house, he's living there. They were just denouncing, and this was the first kind of using people to denounce others in to make police control, like policing. And these officers who implemented all these techniques, they wrote books. They wrote books about counterinsurgency. One is called La Guerre Moderne, The Modern War. Another is called Théorie de la Contre-Insurrection, Theory of the Counterinsurgency. And when the war finished, I mean, after 61, 62, when Algeria get independence, they created in Paris a school, and they sent these officers to pass on the knowledge of actually torturing, killing, and controlling people. And they sent also all over the world these officers. And what is important to know, there is a movie that is very important to find as... now I have... This is why my brain is a bit working like automatic now, but... I will remember. A very movie that is explaining all this process, how these officers were sent all over the world and mostly in South America. And they were just teaching to police all over the world, to Pinochet. The Pinochet police, for example, was trained by this police to destroy rebellion somehow. To destroy rebellion, so to destroy also unrest and people's uprising. And one fact more about this colonial time, when the independence got in force in 62, they had the French government had to remove all the police forces and all the officers from the French army. They had to remove them to France, and this is how a lot of ancient officers of the army was actually used by the police, and they were like. They were put back in the police, and all the officers from the Prefecture d'Alger, from Algeria, was brought directly to the Prefecture de Police de Paris. And this is how, in the 60s, we had many cases of torturing inside police station in Paris, for example, by these officers. But also, moreover, and what we don't know so much, is that they put them also in... They open like what we call Sonacotra were housing for immigrant workers, and mainly it was men from Algeria who were put in this in these places. Also, after a removal, there were huge shanty towns around Paris where were living all the people from Algeria, from the colonies, from Morocco. I mean, all the people of color who are coming from the colonies, working in France. They were in these shanty towns, and after the war, they decided to remove the shanty towns. After also bringing counter-insurrection in these shanty towns and making a whole the same work they did in Algeria, they did it somehow in Paris, and they killed people, they tortured people, and some of these officers from Algeria, they were when they removed this shanty town, they opened housing for immigrant workers and mainly Algerians, and the people we call them gérants, the people managing these places, they were ancient officers who were torturing Algeria and who were like working in Algeria before. They were putting them in these houses and they were like managing, like a gardien, I don't know how you say, like the person who is responsible for the quiet, the cleanliness, and all the staff, all the administration of these places. And this is also from the dirty history of France. And it is for us related to policing and to police control, racist control. This is how they destroyed also the FLN. Like at some point, they succeeded in destroying the impact of the FLN, even if it never really disappeared, because it became the government of Algeria. I mean, the party in power was the FLN, and it's still until now, I think. Yeah. So this is the colonial period. I make it very short, but you have to know also that in this period, one ancient Nazi chief of the police, during the Vichy regime, Maurice Papon is his name, so I make it shorter. Maurice Papon was working for the Vichy regime. He was also torturing and killing and making resistance disappear, communists, whatever, like people who were resisting the Nazi regime. And after the war in the 60s, this guy was brought to the Prefecture de Police, where he stayed more than 7 years. So he was the police chief, the chief of the police department of Paris during 7 years. And during these years, we have the 68 uprising. But we have also a huge killing of Algerian people in the city of Paris, like in 61, in 17 of October 61, when the Algerians came from the shanty towns to resist, to go to protest inside the city of Paris against the curfew, because they had to respect the curfew. They could not go after 6 o'clock in the evening, they cannot go out. So they tried to make a protest to make this curfew stop. They went to Paris, and when they wanted to cross the bridges of Paris, hundreds of them, thousands of them, the police were just crushing them in a very heavy way, and they just make more than 200 deaths. It's even today, we still don't know exactly how much were killed, but almost more than 200 people were killed in 1 week, and especially in one evening or two, in one evening, where there were even many of them, they were just thrown into the river by the police of the prefecture de police. And under the commandment and the orders of this Maurice Papon. Even if he was a Nazi, this is also something important in this mechanism of violence in France. I mean, like in Germany also after, we spoke a lot about denazification, but actually the Nazi, they stayed always where they were before, many of them in many places. It was the same in France. Like the people collaborating with the Vichy regime and with the Nazi, they stayed in place. And even they were promoted, like this Maurice Papon, to be all the people from the elite, like they knew that this guy he tortured during the war, but it was like the secret. And they brought also all these people who tortured and who 30 years after the Algerian war, they admitted in books that they tortured in Algeria. It's not even a secret. It's not a theory. It's what's happened, and they even admitted it. And these people, they had a lot of responsibilities after the Algerian war in the French government, in the French administration, and in the French police. Yeah, that's it for the colonial period, I think. And after you have the 70s. And in the 70s, we have this liberalization of economy. We have capitalism coming more, like neoliberalism is really the new way of making capitalism, let's say. And so it brought to liberalization of the weapon industry in this period. So a lot of new factories and new companies were popping up. And weapon companies. So it's the beginning for us of the militarization of French police, because also it's all the market issue, actually. It's a money issue, a market issue, and the government is one of the clients, is one of the customer of these new companies emerging in the 70s and selling weapons. They just want to sell weapons, and the French state became to be a main customer. And this is important because after the years, it will become more and more like the French state cannot get rid anymore of these weapons. They need it, and they need new weapons always, and they need more weapons because it's a market, because it's something going on and increasing, like everything in the capitalist economy is going like this. And the French police is also some kind of a reflection of capitalism since the 70s. And concretely in the 70s, the French police had not anymore a state company providing the gas grenades, for example. They had several choices. I mean, there were several companies, there were more partners of the French governments to get weapons. I told you the history part is always horrible long, but it's bringing to the main things. From the 80s, what is important to remember, we had a socialist government, we had this François Mitterrand, who was like a hope for the whole French left, and everyone thought that this socialist government will change the world, change the things, especially in France, because France is the center of the world, blah, blah. And that's why there were a lot of hopes, and in fact, like the socialist government were implementing some laws to satisfy the left, like the abolition of the death penalty, the abolition of the death penalty, 35 hours a week working, the abortion, there were a lot of abortion laws, so you had a lot of progressist laws that made also the left like just shut the eyes on many other things, and especially regarding people of color and immigrants and people in poor people, but mainly people of color and immigrants in France. And in the 80s, in the same period, the socialist government implemented a lot of laws against immigration. And at the moment, there were some like armed attacks on, I specifically don't use the term of terrorism because I hate this term, it doesn't mean nothing. There are some people fighting with weapons, sometimes for religion, sometimes for ideology. And in the 80s, Muslim fighting for their ideology made attacks in France somehow. And first the Shia movement and then the Sunni movement. I mean, we had waves of attacks and very severe attacks with a lot of deaths. And from this moment, the governments, they began to implement anti-terrorist laws. And they began also to implement new brigades of police that were specifically to fight gangs, high criminals, and terrorists. And you will see that in the last weeks after the death of Nahel, you will see all these brigades that were not for riot control, you will see them now in the riot control. And we are now, this year, in 2023, we understood when there are riot controls, we will see now the anti-terrorist teams in the streets fighting us. And this is something very new. And this is coming back to the 80s, where the pretext of terrorism, sorry, we can discuss it, it's not a problem. The term of terrorism, just I don't use it usually because it's just, it's not clear. And because we were accused of terrorism and we are always accused of terrorism and the Kurdish movement is accused of terrorism. Everyone is accused of terrorism when it's not respecting like some, sorry? Yeah.
I just want to go back on the counter-terrorist act.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the same time, we have in the same... Yeah, it's also all this in the same period. Like the 80s, it really, like for beginning of 70s also, because we had before the Red Brigades and it began already in the 70s, of course. But in the 80s, we had a lot of, and we had also the Basque movement, like independence Basque movement in France, who were also making some attacks and actions. And we had also Armenian group who were making attacks. And we had the, I mean, there were a lot of groups making, the Palestinian cause was also making attacks and deterring like planes and so on. So there were a lot of, it was really the period of where the states had to face a new way to make politics by carrying weapon inside the French, inside the European societies. And this is something very interesting. And this was somehow, yeah, led also by the leftist group, the Maoist groups in the 70s already. And this brought the governments to just make anti-terrorist laws, like, let's say, every 2 years now, and even every year now. And the beginning of this process, it was in the 80s, even if we can find some laws already in the end of the 19th century against anarchists. And this, there is a very interesting book written by a comrade who is actually also a lawyer. His name is Raphael Kempf, if you want to know it. And he wrote a book that is called Les Lois Scélérates. And Les Lois Scélérates, they are the first anti-terrorist laws already in the 19th century, but specifically against anarchists. Yeah, it's interesting actually to notice it because it's the first time they used the French equivalent of conspiracy charges, what we call association malfaiteur, the first framework of the law framework of this conspiracy shit was implemented already in the 19th century. So yes, we have a bit of background to the 80s. In the 90s, we have a lot of racist crimes by Nazis, by fascists, by everyday fascists, like this common fascist, the people who are not like involved in some militant group or some right-wing group, but some people who were living in Algeria, some old people who are just racist, and they were attacking like some foreigners, immigrants, and we had a huge wave in the 80s, 90s. That brought also, I made a first presentation on Wednesday where I explained more the struggle of the families of victims, so I will not explain the struggle of the families of victims today. But it's also beginning in the 80s, 90s. At the moment, there were this huge wave of crimes against people of color, and also implemented somehow by police groups. And we had like weird groups of like making direct action police groups, like one, for example, is very known, like Honneur de la Police, Honor of Police. It was a group of unknown people, and they are still covered somehow by the secret, because they were, some of them, they were belonging to the state machine, the state apparatus. They were in the police, and they were next to their job, they were making attacks against leftist groups and against immigrants. So because of this wave of crimes, we arrived to the 90s, and the socialist government will somehow get out of the game and the right will come back, and this is this old alt-right from the Gaullist kind right, and they are all colonial scumbags, to be honest. They are just these people who grew up with the Algerian War, who grew up in colonization, who are benefiting from colonization because they belong to the bourgeoisie, to the high classes of the country, and they came with Jacques Chirac. Somehow they came back in the game. They came back in the. I mean, they were always somehow in the game, but they began to be really. They ministers. They had like very important and préfet, ministre, and etc. And especially we have one called Pasqua, Charles Pasqua. He's very important to remember this guy, because in the 90s he was the one who were the hope of the right to return order and to stop terrorism and to stop also what they begin to call the délinquance ordinaire, like the everyday criminality. And he implemented in the 90s a new police that is called La BAC. BAC is the Brigade Against Criminality, and they are this undercover, without uniform cops that are also used first against foreigners in the neighborhoods, in the poor neighborhoods, against foreigners, and especially former colonial immigrants. And they will also be used later for riot control. It's like everything was experienced first in Algeria, in the colonies, against colonized people, against people of color in France. And then when they saw that this is working good, they use all these means in the riot control. So now we have a huge like a panel of shit riot control also because of these experiences that were made for 10, 20, 30 years in the neighborhoods, in the banlieue. So 90s, they implement this police, and they implement new weapons. So it's the beginning of the use of rubber bullets that was inspired actually by the British colonial policing, because rubber bullets, plastic bullets, wooden bullets were used by the British police. And in the colonies, in Bangladesh, in India, everywhere. And so it's also, you have to think that all these 80s, this 60s, 80s period, all these officers from the Algerian War, they made training all over the world, they went to America, to New York, they went to the South of America, and they brought all these techniques and this new thinking. You have a real strong think tank, police think tank, that is actually thinking always about new means, modernizing this technique of the colonial time. And sorry, I'm not in the microphone anymore. I'm excited. when you struggle 10 years against police, you begin to be really like fanatic and you hate them so much. So, and all this knowledge that was spread all around the world was also updated, upgraded by other police from other countries, by all these police schools, and especially America, North America. And in the 90s, it's also the period where began the altermondialism, like the fights of the far the black blocs began in the 80s, 90s, And this direct action provided in the streets against the police was beginning in all this period. And the knowledge from America came back also to France. And this has led also France to accept this idea to use rubber bullets and grenades against the crowd, even if grenades were used already before. But it's also not known until they kill really people and everyone is knowing it. Why I say they were convinced also in the 90s to use and 90s, 2000s to use these weapons is because you have to understand that in France there are two schools inside the police. There are two way of thinking riot control, law enforcement, and it's always a fight between these two police, these two ideology inside the police, and mostly between the gendarme and the police, and between this old style riot control and the new style riot control. You have a really modern, postmodern way of policing that came after the 90s, and many officers inside the police and the gendarmerie, they were not immediately open for this. And still today, there are some old officers who are not really appreciating the use of rubber bullets. They have to use them, but they are always saying it's bullshit because it's changing the way we make riot control. It's like they disagree with the theory somehow. Like they find it's not effective or it's too violent. It's making too much blood for some of them, so it's not nice. I mean, this kind of concern, they have them because they prefer the old riot control where you just push in front like these police lines with the shields and they throw gas and water cannons. And many of these officers or this, there's even sociologists, like they are police sociologists. They are what we call journaflic, like also like journalists. Police flic means cop in French. Journaflic is like all the journalists who are very close to the prefecture. They are the ones who are sitting in the morning when they come to job. They take their phone, they call the police, the police department, and they ask what are the news, you know. And so they are given the news by the police. And all this environment, all this ecosystem of people loving the police, they are. They are mainly, for example, taking Germany as an example, because in Germany there is no grenades, there is no rubber bullets. So they say law enforcement in Germany is better. It's less violence, more effective, blah, blah. So they are very different schools. It's also interesting that to know that there are debate and conflict inside this whole shit. They are not all agreeing on the way to injure people and to make riot control. So, yeah. I come to the actual period. We had Sarkozy after. And this is also the period where our generation, I'm from this generation born in the 80s, let's say, and who began to get into politics in 2005, 2006, and it was the Sarkozy period. And for us, Sarkozy, he was the reflection of the American way of thinking society, of thinking politics, of thinking economy. He was very aggressive. He was using the media in a new way, like to really make somehow aggressive speeches against immigrants. And we thought at this moment, I mean, I remember that for me, Sarkozy was the worst. I didn't imagine even that Macron could exist, like that it could be worse than Sarkozy in this period. He was very aggressive, and he implemented a lot of new means for the police. The rubber bullet, new weapons. Usually we make also presentation of weapons. I would really have liked to make you this presentation, and we have all the weapons. We gathered all this weapon in these 10 years, and I think it's very important to see them. But I was not very comfortable to bring them through the customs here in Switzerland. So I will not show them, but we have also presentation. But there are a lot. You have a choice. Like it's like a market. If you want to buy some different ones, you have different gas grenades. You can choose. And the police, they do the same. They have some exhibition where they choose the weapons. They go there every 2 years. There is Milipol in Paris. Milipol is a salon, like an exhibition, where all the killers of the world, they present their weapons and their things. And the Ministère de l'Intérieur, the interior minister, has a big stand, a big table inside the thing with the Chinese, with the Iranian, with all the friends of France. They are sitting there and they choose the weapons. They go and they make contracts. This is how it's working since the 70s. It's just to have it in mind. And Sarkozy, he's one of this guy who will come and say, yeah, let's modernizing the police and let's bring the new tools. So he's bringing new tools. He's bringing the grenades, the sting ball grenades. Like it's a grenade where that's when you throw this grenade. I mean, when they throw this grenade, because we don't. They have 18 rubber pieces. So when the grenade is exploding, it's just throwing around 18 pieces of plastic. That is actually the speed of this of one of these pieces is 400 kilometers hour. It's like it's thrown with the speed of a TGV, of this fast train, you know. And it's just removing the eyes from people since it's implemented. So this Sarkozy thought that this is a good way to use a new mean that is interesting, and the made in Switzerland weapon that is shooting rubber bullets. Thank you, Switzerland. And but now we have the French company doing exactly the same gun, and they're happy because now it's French made. It's like more local. But yeah. In this period, it was the Swiss one, and Sarkozy, he was implementing it in 2005, 2007. And in 2007, we had the first injured. It's a friend. He's from our collective. He lost his eye because... So he didn't lose the eye. He lost the use of the eye, but many, they lose the eye. I mean, if you understand the difference, some people, they just... The globus, the ball of the eye is just getting out. So this is... In this case, they are just losing the eye. But many also, they lose the sight. It's broken. So he had the eye broken, and he's the first one in 2007 to have this. And so we had to get used somehow. We had to understand that they are using these weapons. I remember, like, between 2007 and 2012, we were involved in struggle. I mean, I was involved already in 2005, like in the suburbs riots. And I don't remember that until 2012 or 2011 exactly, I don't remember that I noticed the use of these weapons. Even they were used. I remember in NATO, I don't know if you know, but in 2009 in Strasbourg, there were a huge like counter summit against the NATO. And when I looked at the picture much later, I saw that we were standing and we were fighting and they were throwing these grenades, and I don't remember it. We remembered from the moment our friends were injured. It's always like this. It's very weird, but we all react somehow like this. When it's personally touching us, we try to have a switch in our minds, and we created the Colosseum at this moment because we had friends just pushed out of the street. They would never go back to protest because of this. Because they had a lot of pieces of metal and plastic in the genitals and in the legs, you know? And it's just, you cannot remove them. These are pieces of shit that are also infectious, that are inside your bodies, and the doctors, they don't remove them even because you cannot remove them. So you live with pieces of shit in your body, and of course with all the trauma and all the things going with this. So this is really the period where Sarkozy implemented all these weapons, and after him, a new socialist government, François Hollande, who actually was, let's say, before Macron, was actually implementing was repressing the most the left, for example. He was, like, Sarkozy was very focused on the poor neighborhoods. He was very focused. There were the riots in 2005, the riots in 2007, and he was very involved in sending all this undercover police to just repress the youth in the suburbs. And Hollande, he had this because he has a minister, maybe you know, he's called Manuel Valls. And Manuel Valls is like, it's a left-wing fascist. It's just nothing else than a left-wing fascist. And he was very focused on the far left. So we had the Notre-Dame-des-Landes eviction, we had the Sivens eviction, and in Sivens, one young ecologist was killed by a grenade. And this is when we realized also, one step more, we realized that actually since the 50s, the French police was the French military police, the gendarmerie, was using a war grenade against riots with inside 70 grams of TNT. And this just blew off the neck of Rémi Fraisse. His name is Rémi Fraisse. He was just killed like immediately in the night by a grenade that was thrown on him. And he just was killed immediately. And like we realized, oh fuck, they are just also using war grenades. And this was also a switch for us in 2014. This was in 2014. We already founded our collective in 2012. And in 2014, this incident brought us to create a new collective, a network of victims, in which we had, like, at the beginning, 15 people who lost an eye, like, in the same collective. And what is interesting about this specific fact when the socialist government killed Rémi Fraisse is that there were a huge debate after the killing of Rémi Fraisse to think, and this, I bring it now, and I will finish about the historical part soon. Why it's important? Because they had a discussion. Like the government, they made an investigation, the parliament made an investigation about the killing of Rémi Fraisse. And the whole discussion after the killing of Rémi Fraisse was, should we remove this grenade or another one? Because they used two different grenades with TNT. And there were a whole, and you can find it, I mean, in French, of course, but you can find a whole report where there is the discussion of this investigation group about And about like the inspection of the police and the inspection of the gendarmerie, they sit together in rooms and they are discussing and deciding if this grenade should be forbidden. And then they said, yeah, but there are two grenades. So there are one grenade is used only by the military police and the other one is used by the two forces. So if we remove this one, is it a good thing for the police or should we remove the other one? So they were just discussing if we remove one or the other models, even if they knew exactly which model killed Rémi Fraisse. And when you read this discussion, I mean, you understand also that the weapons they use is explaining their mentality, the way they see riot control and policing in the French society. It's like, it's also a matter of private business, of which company we will satisfy and which company we will disappoint. And they have a discussion about to know like which company we will disappoint somehow. Or what would be the more effective? And they have this idea, and we had the confirmation in a court hearing like just at the end of last year, in 2022, that also they think how not to emasculate the French cops. Like they really consider that the weapon is a viral, it's something viral for the police. It's their strength, it's their power. And if you remove one grenade, you make them weaker. And in the court hearing in 2022, I will tell you about, because it's also about the grenade, the lawyer defending the cop, he said the thing. He said, if you sentence the cop who removed the eye of this guy, you will emasculate the whole police of France, the whole French police. He used the word emasculate. It's the same in English, right? Like he removed the bolts from the cops. Like. And this is how, when you understand this, we wrote an article about how the grenades are reflecting this whole masculinist way of thinking riot control in France and how it's like viral. And this violence is part of this masculine way of thinking power. And this is very interesting. And you will see how the cops behave and how they organize themselves is all in this direction of like preserving their power, their masculine power in society. And after the death of Rémi Fraisse, it was very obvious. It was very obvious in this discussion that the way they discussed like the removal of these grenades is saying a lot about how they think. And it's also saying how you have behind a lot of thinker, of ideologists of the violence, or people working inside police and working in all these groups, like thinking how the violence could be the nicest, how the violence could be the more effective, how we can communicate on violence without losing face and dignity, like somehow. It's a whole communication plan, how to preserve weapons and how to use them and how to make policing and all this. And from the last period where our collective were already existing, we're facing a lot of killings, we're facing a lot of injuries, like every year there were more injuries and new weapons. We have always to upgrade and we're using Twitter to know, some people they send us photo and say, hey, I saw this weapon in the street, what that? And we have to search, like, what the fuck is this? What they have this in the hand? Like, what they think? You know, where it's coming from? Which company is providing this? It's a whole work of investigation to know every new weapon, where it's coming from, to know who we address, which company is responsible, and everything. But we don't make them responsible, never. I mean, we don't go to court for any company. Because all this is legal, like selling weapons to any governments, totally, it's like inside the capitalist market, so you have nothing to do. You cannot like complain against this even. It's just a regular market and a regular business. So this is our work also since then. And at the same time, we had to work with the victims. I tried to focus on things that are very important in this history, the recent history. In 2016, for example, 2015, we had these attacks in Paris, like Charlie Hebdo and Bataclan and other cafes that were attacked by armed groups. And at this moment, came back again the topic of terrorism with also always goes with another big discussion in France that is going on and going on, actually is going on right now in Saint-Imier also, about the veil, about Islamophobia, about how this law are reflecting also something that is hate against Arabs and black people, and not only, like against immigrants, but mainly Arab and black people, and gypsies also. And so we had this attacks in Paris. And after this attack, they implemented the state of emergency. This state of emergency was implemented based on a law that was the first time used and implemented and voted for the first time during the Algerian war and the Algerian context. So the state of emergency was nothing else but a colonial framework to repress people that are indesirable. And in this, you can put whatever. And the government is deciding. Actually, the intelligence service is deciding and is defining. That's why, for me, it's very important not to use the term terrorist. Because we are not deciding who is a terrorist. They are deciding who is a terrorist. The intelligence service is deciding who is a terrorist. And they make laws regarding to this, and they create categories that are not existing. The last category they created and they used in the public speeches is Islamo-gauchist. Islamo-gauchist is a term that means Islamic leftist. It's just all the people supporting Palestine, actually, in their point of view, they are Islamo-gauchist because they support people who could be related to Muslim groups fighting for something. I mean, it's in their logic, it's how they create categories, and when they create categories, they create laws. And they create laws to control this population that are indesirable in the French society. And after the state, with the state of emergency, they had the huge mean, very perfect mean, to do the same as in Algeria, just not killing and torturing. That's just the limit, because we are still a democracy, so we are not torturing and killing. We're just killing in the streets sometimes. So every year we kill 30 people, and this is the death penalty in our country. Some cops killing people, but this is the limit, of like the distinction we can, actually it's also could be a discussion, what's the limit between democracy and dictatorship? For me in France, we already go over the red line, but we can discuss it. Is it the moment we kill someone? Is it the moment we torture people or we put them in camps without any lawsuit? Is this dictatorship or not? Or are we already in France in some kind of postmodern dictatorship? This is a question. I put it aside. But the state of emergency gave them the possibility to experiment new things. House arrests, forbidding protests, like just the préfecture de police decide that this protest is undesirable. And they just forbid it. Administrative decision, it's not a court decision, it's administrative, you say this protest is forbidden, or these people are forbidden to go to protests. And they used it a lot during the state of emergency. And they experimented just after the attacks of Bataclan. They used it against Muslim, mostly against Muslim. And this is something we should never forget. Just after the state after the Bataclan attacks, with the implementation of state of emergency, they put under house arrest 800 people. And they searched 4,000 houses. And among this 800 house arrests, they put also activists, radical activists. How they justified it is because in the same period, in December 2015, they were the COP21 in Paris, and they were afraid about some kind of riot that could occur, and they wanted to show the far left that they are not forgetting them. They are not. It was not a black spot for them. So they put on the house arrest also 25. Activists in French, just 25, among them two people of our collective and myself. And this is also how you see, and this is how we understood, that this administrative way of making policing is a formidable way to implement totalitarianism. And because you just The administrative authority is taking a decision. There is no judge getting into the process. There's no control of the society, no control of the justice. They just decide this person is on the blacklist and this person can disappear from the public sphere, from the public space. So they just not put, they don't, didn't put us in prison, but they put us in prison at home. And actually sometimes it can be also as traumatizing as regular prison. And this state of emergency, they implemented a lot of things. And in 2016, we had huge protests against the labor law reform. And they used a lot of means of force. And I will finish this also with this period 2016-2018, just to make it shorter. It's a period where they implemented a lot of new means of the new weapons. For example, they use an American gun, a riot gun, that is like shooting six grenades in 4 seconds. Like it's like it's a turning machine. It's like a machine gun, like shooting gas grenades. And this is one example, and new grenades. And every time there was kind of scandal because someone was injured, and especially in 2016 and 2018, during the Yellow Vest movement, we had a lot of people injured and very severely injured. We had a lot of people maimed by police weapons. Every time there is a kind of scandal, they say that they changed the weapon. And this is also something interesting. When one grenade is like injuring someone and they scandal about this grenade, they say, okay, yeah, maybe it's a bit dangerous, we change it, we'll put another one that is less dangerous, but in fact, they're implementing grenades that are more dangerous, but the communication plan of the factory is better. It's better, and it's hiding the real impact of this grenade. And we have concrete example I will not give now, but we have some grenades. We noticed that they're worse than the previous one because they have more explosive device inside. And they are injuring the same way. They are blowing off hands. We have several people who lost their hands, and we have a lot of people in 2018 who lost eyes. And this last period, and after I will go more on the system. I speak a lot; it's horrible. But what we understood from the last period, and what we should remember from this last period, is that the militarization of the police became increasingly mad and became increasingly violent, and where also we understood in this period that the police can maim people, can kill people. This is not anymore a scandal for them. They don't have anymore to hide, to justify somehow. They just kill, they just maim people, and it's okay, and we get used to this. So the first, you have a whole media speaking about this, and everyone is like, oh, wow, shit. And especially in the Yellow Vest movement, we saw a lot of faces full of blood with like people that were maimed, like during the war, like with the holes in the cheeks and eyes like going out of, I mean, it's horrible. Sorry, it's a bit trigger. It's just to explain you what we face in France since now, mostly 2016, already before a bit. But what changed is that they don't care about justifying. They don't care about apologizing. They don't make even an investigation like they did when they killed Rémi Fraisse. It's not necessary anymore. And they don't, for example, there are other cases in the 80s and the 70s. There were some incidents like this, people killed by grenades or maimed by grenades. It was a whole thing. They made an investigation. The parliament were interrogating people and whatever. Now they don't care. It's riot control. It's like this. It's the consequences of riot control. You should not go to the street. And this is also something new that came from the state of emergency. If you are in a protest, you know that you take this risk. And you will not be protected because you should not be there. So the last process they made since 2018, and they used what they experimented during the state of emergency, they just forbid protest. And they just find people who want to go to protest. And sometimes they just forbid people to go to protest. And if you go, you can face prison sentences, you can be fined. Mainly, they are fining people. 135 euro every time you go to a protest if you are catched, if you are controlled. They just send you a fine at home. Some people, they get fined, even they don't know that they were controlled. They were just identified by the intelligence service. And by the post, they just get a fine. And this is a new way of policing, like making the whole protest an illegal thing. Protesting is not good. And the whole speeches are making us used to the fact that actually going to the street to protest is something that should not be allowed, because we are just savage people who cannot hold ourselves, we are violent, so every protest is for them an occasion of making violence, so they just erase the right to protest, and this is what's going on now. And this is and the last step of this history part is, I jump a bit, because I think you understood the whole framework, but we had the last events, and I think it's important for anyone to have an overview what happened. I mean, protests continued since 2018. They are more and more repressed. And this last month, we had Nahel, who is a young guy in the car, who was driving a car, who was killed by an officer. He was killed in purpose, even if, I mean, there are pictures, it's obvious. It's also, we always are used by the police, by the government, to think like, let's the justice make its job. And we decide after if the police was guilty. It's not like this. We have an experience of 40 years and more of police killing people and never being prosecuted, never being accused sometimes not even being identified. So we have an experience of impunity, total impunity. It's cops going to court in France is like, it's 1 on 5,000, it's never happening. And so we can say that when a cop is killing someone in the street, it's not okay, there is no justification. There is no discussion to have about, was it right, was he in danger? It's very few cases where they are really in danger. And these few cases is when they are attacked by people with guns, most of the time. Like people who are in criminal organization or political religious organization, so-called terrorists. In these cases, you can say, okay, they are in self-defense because they have someone with a gun in front. But 99% of the people they are killing, they have no weapon, no gun, and when they have a knife, they are not a threat for 5 guys with guns. I mean, it's something we have to get out of our mind. I mean, they have means to arrest people. They are making Krav Maga, they are making Sistema, they are making training every day. They are going to the shooting standard here, I don't know how in English. Shooting range, they are always training, these guys, they're always training, and they are like this, they are typical masculine person who are just excited of being killers. I mean, and this is also sometimes why they join the police, and why they join some specific brigades of the police. They know that LABAC, La Brave M, which is like the acronyms for some specific brigades that are known to be aggressive. When you join this brigade, you are a killer. I mean, you are not working for pacifying the society. You are joining because you want to fight people, and because you are racist, because you hate the leftists, because you have a fascist background and you have a very masculine background. And so Nahel was killed, and we had 5 days of riots. Actually, we had often riots after someone was killed. It's not something new, but this took a very huge proportion. It was even, in 5 days, it was more intense than in 2005 in 3 weeks. It was very, very high intensity, and there were 200 police station attacked. I want to mix the numbers. I mean, but there were dozens of police stations, town halls, shops, and they were looting. And this is something quite new in these riots, that you have a huge part of lootings. But this is also explaining what is the society today about capitalism, about crisis, about the war in Ukraine, making consequences in our societies, and people just getting to the streets. When they go to the streets, they think about, oh, I will bring something to my friend, I will bring something to myself, I will bring some pants, some clothes, some food. And we have some pictures, people going into supermarkets and they bring food. And sometimes you see them, obviously, on the pictures. They should not be pictures, but they are existing, and we have to make with this. But they are sharing like food with the friends, like they are going out to the shop. And this is saying something. Instead of saying, oh, they are criminals, they are delinquents, they are like, we should repress them, you should understand that the people, if they have this reaction. I mean, if you have a wealthy life, if you feel good in your life, if you have projects, if you have chances in society, maybe you would not do this. You don't do this just like this. And this is also how policing is giving excuses always. Policing and governments and speeches, they are always using this idea that all of us, like popular classes, we are just savages without brain. When you go to protest like the Yellow Vest, you have no brain, you are stupid, you are not obeying to orders, you are not working enough, you should work to earn your life, and this is the speeches. It's very, and Macron, he is like the president who is representing this the best. I mean, he was, from the beginning he became president, he was just having contempt to people, to simple people, to any kind of simple people. He was contempting the Yellow Vest, he is contempting the youth from the suburbs. It's someone who is like representing the best, this aristocracy, these bankers who are just not understanding nothing about society, and they don't want to understand, they just want to use us as a labor force. And this is how they'll send the cops to repress us as these vile people who are just not able to stay calm. And so what happened after the death of Nahel is saying many things, and how they reacted is saying many things. And this is something very new. It was shocking. It was really shocking. They were just sending this... Sorry, just a bit. So it's the first time we had to face the use of means that we are not used to. They were using bean bags, they were using riot guns, they were bringing tanks to the streets. Like, you can imagine this. They were bringing tanks in the streets in some city centers in Lille. Never I saw a tank in Lille. Like, Lille is like a calm student city in the north of France. I mean, it's not really a place where you have big protests. And you had in Lille, you had in Nantes, you had in Marseille, you had in Lyon, and all the cities, they send tanks, and they send this guy, like, where, like, they are going to war, like GIs, and they are just shooting in the street, yeah, just with the shotguns, and it's the worst war in Marseille, where they were just shooting on the people. You see horrible pictures where there are people running away. These people are just running away, and they shoot them against the wall, and this is what they did during 5 days, and this is how they calmed down the protest. This is how they calmed down the protest. They just were up to kill, and they killed. In Marseille, they killed one with a rubber bullet, and they killed them because they shoot on them at 2 meters from him. They were just shooting rabbits, and it's not okay to shoot rabbits. Just, it's a comparison how they were acting. And this is something that brings us to the final question. How we got there, and how we can organize, and how all this is going, how this is possible, how this country of human rights, of the Enlightenment, of the French Revolution, of all this bullshit came to this, how we are lying to the world, and how this was implemented. And this is what I wanted, if it's okay to, if I speak longer, it was the historical part, but I think it's very important to understand. And now I want just to make you understand how this machine is working. I mean, how this thing is working, how we think it's working. So, first we have this colonial history that was always denied. So it's still something that is not solved in France. It's something that they are not remembering. There is no really apologizing. We are still keeping all the things that we looted in the museums. And this is not only France, it's everywhere in Europe. We are like keeping things that are not belonging to our societies and communities. We are not facing our colonial history. This is the first problem. The first problem, because the cops they send to the streets, they have this colonial racist mind. And they go to punish people to the streets. And this is why they join the police. And of course, you will always find people saying, yeah, they are leftist cops. They are good cops also. No. There are no good cops. If you are in this system, and especially in France, when you are cops and you see it from inside, you understand that even your colleagues, they are racist with you if you are people of color in the police. They are harassing you because you are a woman. The police is violent. There were books written by former cops, and especially women, who wrote about this, who said this institution is violent, and this institution is racist. And we have a lot of proofs. We have even, we have one picture, for example, one example just. There is one police station in Paris from the 20 district that was monitored a long time by journalists, because we had also like victims coming out of there, people raped by the police coming out of there and making testimonies about what's happening inside. And we needed to have this picture of one black cop attached to a fence at the back of the police station for his first day of work. They made this bizutage, I don't know how in English.
Hazing.
They made like this game of introducing him to the new job, and they attached him, and with all the colleagues, the new colleagues, his new colleagues, so the guys he doesn't know, and the police officer, the commissaire of the this police station, and they are throwing milk and flour on him. They are whitening him, and they are making racist comments for joking. And one neighbor he filmed from behind, because he has a view on this this police station. It's just this simple picture is explaining how some people, some cops inside, yeah, they can suffer. But this is when our slogan, flic, suicidé, à moitié pardonné, makes sense. And you can say also, it's very harsh. It means cops half suicided. Cops suicide is already half forgiven. This is a slogan we use sometimes. It's just to say that the cop who removed his life, he understood that something is wrong and he get out of the police how he could. And the police is also a place where some people who are more weak than others, they cannot just go out. They cannot just say, I go out of the police. They suicide. And there are others who go out. And we consider that a good cop is the cop that is not cop anymore. Because you cannot just accept this, what's all this going on. Or you are totally blinded, or you are really stupid. If you don't see racism and sexism inside the police, it means like you are really brainwashed. And I will not accuse you because you are brainwashed, but until you stay accomplice of all this shit, we cannot discuss with you. So the colonial history, we didn't face it first. Then we had something, we had this whole system of this prefecture, and that is working with the justice. So you have two important functions in the French system, that is le préfet, so it's the police department chief of the region, and you have another one who is between the police and the justice, who is called the procureur, it's the prosecutor. It's existing quite everywhere. But these two persons in the French system, they are deciding and they are implementing impunity. How it's working? When a cop is making shit, in purpose, not in purpose, racist, no racist, he's killing someone and or is injuring someone and there is an investigation. This cop, first of all, the procureur will decide if he will prosecute him. So the procureur, in many cases, he will say there is nothing, no reason to prosecute this cop. He did everything in the frame of law, will not prosecute him. So he is the first to organize impunity from the beginning. He's saying, we don't need to prosecute this cop, he made his job, okay, it went wrong, but he's not guilty, he's not responsible. This is one case. So the prosecutor will decide after, you can appeal. I mean, you can go to court anyway, but it doesn't mean that the cop will go to court. It doesn't mean even that the cop will go to custody. Even they are interrogating him sometimes free. I mean, if I kill someone, I will for sure like stay a bit of time in custody and in detention. The cops, they don't. The one who killed Niall, he is the first one in history who went to detention for that. Really, it's interesting. In 2023, he killed someone, and he is the first cop who killed someone and went to go to not only custody, to detention. I mean, doesn't mean nothing. He will not be prosecuted. For me, I mean, with the experience we have, at some point we will forget about him. He will not go to court. They will find some excuses, and the main excuse is self-defense. I will explain this. So the prosecutor and the préfet, they work like this. After a killing, for example, the prosecutor is intervening and he's giving, after less than 48 hours, he's going to media and he's saying what happened. So he's just giving the version of the police. He's just giving to the news the version in the police. Then, after the prosecutor, you have another actor. You have two actors like working in the same time in this first 48 hours, is the media and the police unions. and mainly the police unions going to media. The police unions, they go to media to make propaganda and lobbying to explain to people that the cop is not guilty. So after many cases, you will have the unions, if the guy was a member of a union, but all the cops, they are a member of the union, and they are 80%, they are part of the most fascist union in France, like 80%, they are, 80% of them, they are in two of the main unions who are very fascist. When Nahel was killed, when there were the riots, they were just calling for war in their official communique. They are representing 80% of the cops. And they were just writing, we are ready for war, we should remove this nuisible, how you say nuisible, this cockroaches, like this, yeah, vermin. They use this word in the official communique.
Can you just give the name of the two unions?
Yeah, Alliance Police Nationale and UNSA Police.
UNSA?
UNSA, U-N-S-A, Union Nationale, something. And actually it's a union for all the workers and all the, yeah. No, 80%. Ils représentent 80% des policiers. Ils représentent quasiment l'intégralité du corps policier. After you have two or three other unions who make that 20 last percent. And these two unions, they are very fascist. They are very right-wing. They are very aggressive. And when they send their representative to the media, they say very horrible speeches. And the first thing they do, they criminalize the victim. And this is also one thing they do. The prosecutor is coming to say what happened, to give the police version, and the unions, they go to the media everywhere and they say this was self-defense and he was threatened by this horrible guy who wants to kill him. So they make the whole storytelling, and the media are mostly always accomplice of this because they choose to invite these people always. And they are not really so much inviting the families of victims who could also give a version. Sometimes they do. After the killing of Nahel, for example, they invited some representative sisters and mothers and brothers of victims, and they gave them interviews, but they are very aggressive with them, saying always justifying, and they ask them if they condemn the violence by the youth, like the riots. And this is the way they just destroy the families who are coming to testify. Sometimes if they come to TV, they will just put them under pressure and they will make them somehow apologize and say and recognize that somehow, but the families of victims, they defend themselves very good. But I mean, this is what they want from them. And they will not really have let them give an analysis about the situation, about the system or anything. They will just like push them under pressure and ask them stupid questions. So media, prosecutor, préfecture. The préfet is like, he's the one who will protect. The préfet, the Minister of Interior is above, and the union of cops, when you sign for a union, when you are part of a union in France, you have privileges. So your union and the police, they will offer you holidays, they will offer you some money, like prime, I don't know how it's called, some bonus. I mean, you will have a lot of advantages as a cop when you are in a union. And one of the main advantages, they will guarantee you what we call protection fonctionnelle. It means functional protection. What this means, it means when you will go to court or during the whole process, they will pay you the best lawyer. They will pay it for you. So the cops, they are never paying their lawyers. Never. It's mainly the state, I mean, it's interesting. The unions are helping with the public money. So they are defended by the public money. And of course, they take a lot of money, these lawyers. They make a business. There is one lawyer, his name is Laurent-Franck Lienard. He's a libertarian. He wrote a book about justifying the use of weapons. He's a fanatic of weapons. And he said like everyone should have a weapon to defend himself. And this Lienard is mainly defending all the killers. I mean, I don't know how much. He already in the media he said, "Yeah, already defended 3,000 cops." I mean, he's proud of it. And he is always pushed in front, and he's paid by the government. He's paid by the French state to protect the police. And this is guaranteed by this protection fonctionnelle, that is also with the agreement and with the help of the unions. And yeah, so you understand how this mechanism is working. So they make everything so the cop will not go to court. Because if he's going to court, anyway, there is a risk that one judge, he will take a decision that is more in advantage of the victim, he will understand the victim. But after, you will have a lot of other things that will make these cases not going through. And this is, and especially this is when you will see intervening the people who are making the laws. The unions, when they are unhappy about a situation, for example, in 2012, a guy was killed in the back by a police officer. His sister was very active in fighting. She made a huge fight. She organized victims, other families. Her name is Amal Bentounsi. Her brother is called Amin Bentounsi, who was killed in April 2012. And she organized other victims, and she targeted like the right thing. Like she said, he was killed in the back. You cannot speak about self-defense. Because it's one really specific case where he was killed from behind, and they were saying that he was threatening the cop. And they were also, it was going through because there were witnesses in the car, and the three witnesses, they were all lawyers. So we have very good witnesses on this case. And also the case was very obviously lying, like he had the injury from behind. I mean, there are cases going through with injuries from behind. It's fine. I mean, the cop is not guilty. I mean... even if it's obvious that he killed from behind. But this case were very emblematic, and the cops were finally sentenced to a small sentence, like 18 months, with a suspended month in prison, a small fine for killing someone. And now he is representative of the union in Grenoble. Like he was promoted, he is now representing the union, even if the justice recognized him as a killer. He's one of the few ones who were recognized as a killer. And why I speak about him? Yeah, after he was sentenced, the cops, they were so fucking angry. They made protests. They made protests also because there were another incident with some youth. They were throwing firework on a police machine, and there were fire, and they said the whole thing that it was a get-up-ans, like an attack that they wanted to kill the police, and it was a huge case. So the cops, they all went to the streets. And they were very angry about this, and they were asking for years that one of the main demands was to implement a law that is protecting more the cops when they are killing someone. And this happened finally in 2017, just before Macron was president. So this is one shit he didn't do, but the socialists did it for him, because the socialist government really prepared the power of Macron, like really good with the state of emergency, with all the laws. They give the throne to Macron. Anyway, just before he was elected, this law was implemented. And this law is called, there's one article in this law, it's the article 435, L435, that is making a list of five situations where the cops, they can just open fire and be protected. So in fact, what they wanted is to give a specific framework for self-defense. In 1994, in the French Penal Codex, there is an article that is giving the framework of self-defense for everyone. That is quite fair. I mean, if you are threatened by a gun, if you are threatened to life, you respond, you kill the others, you should be protected by law. I mean, if you are in a legal perspective, or if, you should be protected by law, and everyone is covered by the same law. Cop, no cop. What they wanted is a specific framework to say that the cops, because they are facing a violent society, they have to get more protection in specific cases where they consider that they are under threat. So they listed five situations. One of them that we speak a lot about is one person who will not stop the car when the cops are asking to stop the car. If the car is going, they can shoot. So they do this. 2022, they killed 14 people like this. And among them, three women. This was new for us, because there are very few women killed by the police in France. But the same year, they killed four women. They were mostly sitting next to the driver, behind the driver, and actually they were shooting on cars, and they shoot the people in the middle of Paris and many places, not only in suburbs and hidden places in the center of the cities. And they were just shooting on the driver, and yeah, if they shoot on the driver, there's someone behind the driver. I mean, the person will be killed too. And this is how it happened. And we have situation where we have two killed in the same car. We have several situations like this. And they don't need, with this law, they don't need to justify nothing. It's like this kind of situation is giving a protection. That's it. So at some point, you will say many families, they have the hope that you can just dig inside the file, find pictures, witnesses, and that you will prove things. And yeah, maybe you will find witnesses. They don't care about the witnesses. You will find proofs. You will not be able to have the proofs because they have experts. They have ballistics experts, they have medical experts, and they will all go in the same direction as the cop version. And why? Because actually, it's not, this is interesting. I think it's the same in other countries. I don't know if it's specific in France. But when the justice is asking for an expert to give his expertise about something, he's asked questions. And mainly, the question is turned in a way that they say, what the cops are saying, do you think that what the cops are saying is compatible with what you see in the body of the person, for example? So the expert is not making an investigation, hypothesis, saying hypothesis one, hypothesis two, hypothesis three. No, he's taking the hypothesis of the police and he's just saying it could be like this. It could be right. It could be like this that happened. It's, and he's just answering like this. He is not asked to give another possibility. He is not asked to put a doubt. He's just asked, answer to this question. Yes or not, is it compatible? And which rate? Yeah, yeah. It's, I think we finish because I think yeah. I will give the words because I to the questions because I think many of the things they were told and we can bring new information maybe in the questions. I'm sorry for this long speech. Yeah. So.
Okay, just a quick question to the expert. So you think that the nature of the from the cop trial. So is the other side allowed to bring their own expert?
No, in the French law, you can just ask for counter expertise, and they will design the counter expert. And the counter expert can be the first expert. It means the first expert can make counter expertise on his own expertise. And this is happening really often. Yeah. But it's the judge, you just ask for a favor, and sometimes they can say no need for counter-investigation. Do you want the microphone, or?
Can you understand me in the back? Yeah. I wanted to ask about the historical development, but I also think that there have been responses to tactics from the left. So I think your narrative was kind of focused on the internal logic of the police development, escalating it. And I just wondered because I have Germany as a comparative case in mind, where they, as you said, they're much less violent, like no rubber bullets, no. And I wondered like whether there's some tactics that stopped working because the protest got more militant in France, for instance. Like the German rocks are very effective, like people who just stand there with a shield, but they can fight back with rubber bullets. Say. So I just wondered whether there's like a dynamic play of forces also.
So yeah, this is interesting because. This is the question about could be responsible for the changes in the police policy. No, but I understand that's not your point of view. But somehow it's how we understand the thing. It means, and we take as an example, for example, 68, the huge protests, riots, strikes in 68. Five people were killed during this protest by grenades, by firearms. And the French police was using firearms until the end of the 60s. They were shooting on people. Like in Guadeloupe, we had 87 people killed. I mean, and often our not enemies, but our contradictors, they are using this argument, for example, that the society and the protest, the people became more violent, that we have an increase of tactics, of violence. But actually, if you look to history, it's not the fact. I mean, the protest in 68, the protest against the nuclear energy in the 70s, out of the cities, in the outside, were higher, more tense sometimes than Notre-Dame-des-Landes, for example. And they were sending tanks to the this period where they wanted to implemented nuclear plants everywhere in France. There were huge resistance, and they were attacking the police, they were attacking the gendarmes. So, I mean, the intensity of, let's say, our response, because as a people, it's always in response, is not more tense or more organized today. I mean, we can discuss this. I mean, it's a point of view, but I think it's not what's happening. There's no escalating from our side. We are just doing always the same. We have the same cocktail Molotovs. We have the same stones. We are not using new ways of acting. And even less, in France, we are never using helmets in protests. We are not really having, we have shields sometimes. I mean, there are shields and protected banners, but we have no sticks, no big sticks like in Italy or in Greece or helmets or so on. We don't have. So this is what I would answer.
About the use of forensic science by police and courts. I do recommend a course from the University of Lausanne. It's a massive open online course on the Coursera platform, which speaks about how forensic scientists should speak to courts and how you should review their report, because the framing of questions is very important. And there is actually a European guidelines of how forensic science should write their report and speak to courts. And many times you can review forensic reports and they are not aligned with those guidelines. They are biased in the way they write reports. So if you train yourself to this specifics of how to use forensic science in courts, then you can start pointing at the flaws of the expertise report you are facing and you're trying to defend and dismantle. So I highly recommend that course from the University of Lausanne on how forensic scientists should speak to courts and basically what is that they should not be doing in those reports. And this is a way for you to be prepared and train yourself.
Yeah, I could just answer something like this to this, because we implemented for 2 years an
investigation group. And with this new means of 3D modeling and all this, it's very hard, it's very expensive. But it's a mean that is developing a lot, especially in media. So this is a way, but the problem is very hard to bring the things to court in France, because you are not supposed, as a victim, the part of the victim is not supposed to bring this kind of expertise. They can push it into the file if they have the right to somehow. It's very hard to push something like a video reconstruction or something. It's not, they can allow it. They can listen to it, and it will play a role maybe, but not really. Another thing is, actually, because I was involved in this group, I made a diploma of ballistics. Like I finished a diploma of ballistics for 1 year, and I saw from inside also how ballistics is taught to lawyers, to cops, to everyone, and some the people coming to make the training. So of course I was totally like not saying who I am in this training, but they are bringing cops and gendarmes, like experts, scientists from the police. And the part of the, for example, about the less lethal weapons was 1 hour, even not 1 hour, it was inside another PowerPoint. They had 1 day, it was a 1 year, 1 year training. They had 1.5 day and they had only 1 hour speaking about less lethal weapons. They just put some pictures saying, yeah, this is rubber bullet, this is, they didn't put even the characteristic of these weapons. And the amazing weird things is that as a source, they put our leaflet. Really, I was looking at this, I was like, what the fuck? And they removed the name of the collective, of course, you know? It's like, weird. Anyway, it's just to show you how these things are working.
You want it?
Yes, I'm sorry, I just
speak English. Ça te va si... Ça, je fais la traduction. I can translate, maybe.
Merci. Tu as parlé du préfet et du procureur. Et qu'est-ce qu'il en est pour le magistrat ou la magistrate?
So the question is, you spoke about the préfet and the prosecutor, but what about the judges, like the magistratures, like all the kind of judges? The judges, of course, they have a freedom to decide whatever they want. I mean... it's just like you have the investigation judge. He will play a key role. The judge at the end who will prosecute, who will have a court hearing with the judge judging the cop, is very rare. It's not happening. Because even these judges, they don't have so much the opportunity to see a cop being judged in front of them, because the investigation judge before will play a big role. And especially, yeah, I could name also, I could speak about the investigation judge, because he's also working closely with the prosecution and with the cops, and he's deciding. He's the one who decides if he will take an expertise. He will decide if he will put the cop under interrogation, in which way. He can decide to reconstruct the scene. He can decide not to do it. So he has a huge role to decide. And many of them, they are from this French aristocracy that are not really aware. At the best, they are not aware. Or they are against, like they have their own point of view, or they are just not aware about what's going on. And in many situations, you see that they don't understand nothing. Oh yeah, what I didn't mention is that there is one way to introduce a kind of expert in court, and we played this role for some victims. 5 times I went to court to speak about the weapons, to describe the weapons to the judge, because they won't do it, because there's a loss of time, no need. The judge doesn't need to understand all these technical aspects. So we use this possibility that is called témoin de moralité. So you can be witness, morality witness it's called, and you are not witness of the fact. You are not there when it happened, but you can bring something to the court that is useful to understand the situation. So we did this, and I brought this expertise, our own from the collective expertise about grenades and weapons. I bring it 5 times to the court. So most of the time they listen to you and they are learning things, and you see them all, and they are sometimes asking, saying, well, they don't know nothing. They just don't know nothing about these grenades. Like most of the people don't do, because you need to be focused, a bit mad like us, to spend 10 years like learning about fucking weapons, but they don't know. So they are not aware about what's going on. They know the law, they have some inputs about the facts, they have the cop version, but they lean a lot on the experts. A lot. I don't know if it's answering to your question.
Si, oui, si, merci. Je voulais savoir un peu ce que tu allais en dire, parce que c'est vrai qu'au niveau des... par rapport à ce que peuvent faire les magistrats, les magistrates, et comment les syndicats de la magistrature les défendent et entretiennent une espèce de stabilité dans leurs droits, il n'y a pas du tout la même chose en face. On laisse faire des choses à Alliance et l'UNSA qui sont complètement hallucinantes. Or, on retire des droits aux syndicats de l'autre côté, du coup, enfin, voilà, c'est juste ça.
J'essaie de traduire. Mainly you'd say that, it was, this question was also to understand about more the inequality between the victim part and the other part that is not, has not the same, let's say, possibility, freedom to bring to the court. C'est ça, hein? Je vais pas traduire mot à mot, mais I don't remember the end. I'm not a very good translator, actually. Ah, yeah, the unions. You want to say? you said about the unions. That the unions in court, and also the role they play as unequal, like the unions from the other side who could like support the victims, they have not the same place, and there is not the same equality. And
no, the union of the judges.
Ah, the union of the judges. Ah, yeah. Yeah, they make a lot. The union of the judges, they make a huge work in advocacy, public advocacy. But they are also, sometimes we have meeting with them. But in the court, they have not really, I don't know how to say. They act as, you have very few left judges, for example. It's like, I don't. Sorry, it was a bit confused in how answering the question. Because
I have a question to the juge d'instruction. Yeah. He's part of the justice or of the court?
He's part of the justice.
Of the justice?
Yeah.
But he's not acting as...
No, the investigation...
He's independent, but I mean, the justice in France is supposed to be independent, not to depend on the government, on the state.
So the
prosecutor should be more independent from the justice, but the investigation judge is part of the justice system. But he has a kind of independence in the in investigating cases. This specific framework for this. A last question, maybe? It's fine, the last one.
Inside of the police, outside of France, in if something, let's say, happens in France and Dima in some other context, and you could get prosecuted, but the person, the people are not from France, and then move around. How much does the French police connect with the other European police or Interpol or? I don't know what are the structures that share information, or are they that information shared like automatically, or do they have to like make some things?
It's a work in progress. Means it's something they want to implement the and they use a lot this Schengen information system, which is like the passport system, and they use it a lot to cross information. This is the way they collaborate. In the technique and all the means, the technique, the weapons used, like the experience of policing, they share a lot. I mean, they have meetings of police. There is a group, a European, comment s'appelle? Like there's a network of the commissaire de police and of the police. And they are sharing, and Europol and Interpol, they are organizing very regularly, like on all the topics of riot control, of drug trafficking, of whatever, they make meetings, and so they work closely together. And what regarding the collaboration about, like the legal collaboration, yeah, they are implementing means, like this European mandate, they are using the Schengen system, and more, but it's still very bilateral. It's like two countries agreeing on the framework, and the biggest collaboration in Europe is between France and Germany, for example, where like if you are going with your problems from France and you think that you can escape to Germany somehow, I mean, it's a very wrong idea, because like the police is working together. I have some example around the G20, for example. During the G20, like, we were announced to come. I mean, I found a paper, like when I was put in custody during the G20 in Hamburg, and they gave me a paper, and on the paper it was written that the French police gave information to the police of Hanover, like the criminal police of Hanover, that these people are suspected to come and they are potentially violent and you should just remove them. You should, if you control them at the border, you should send them back, because they have agreements in the specific framework of international gathering, for example. Or you should take measures to take him off of the street. So they took me off of the street, for example. And this is something that is working, that is existing. This is working with the Fish S, but it's more like information shared by the intelligence service. You have not necessarily a Fish S, but yeah, it's based on this. This Fish S system in France is like is a base for this collaboration. Well, I think we should finish. Thank you for...